Colonel Bat Guano. That sounds like an auspicious start. Colonel Bat Guano, if that is your real name. Countries have invaded other countries for centuries in order to increase their size or to lay claim to natural resources like gold, silver, copper, and oil. But in 1865, the United States passed an act to acquire by peaceable possession any uninhabited, unclaimed island, mainly in the South Pacific, for the sole purpose of taking their crap. The Guano Act of 1865 authorized the United States to occupy these islands to mine guano, which is rich in nitrogen and phosphorus and highly valued as a fertilizer. The United States claimed nearly 100 islands under the act and still owns about a half dozen today. As to the amount of crap the government still has, that's for you to decide. This is my good friend Harvey. Oh, tell me this is not an invisible rabbit. In 1726, an English maid, Mary Toft, reported to the authorities that she had been accosted and molested by a 6-foot rabbit. Holy fucking shit. Some of the townsfolk were skeptical, no shit, and some actually believed her, ordering their wives and daughters to stay inside at night and, of course, not to open the door to any 6-foot-tall rabbits. 5 months after the rabbit rape, Mary collapsed in a field and was declared pregnant by a local doctor. A little over a month later, Mary gave birth and the baby looked just like its father, a rabbit. Over the next few days, Mary gave birth to 7 more rabbits, all of them dead. News of the bunny babies reached King George I, and he sent 2 of England's finest physicians to investigate. The doctors performed various tests on the dead rabbits and amazingly declared the births genuine. Under direction of a 3rd expert, Mary was moved to a London hospital and put under round-the-clock surveillance. During that time, Mary didn't move a hair. Oh my God. A gardener confessed to supplying Mary and her husband with baby rabbits, and Mary finally admitted the ruse. She told authorities the motivation behind the hoax was her husband had lost his job and they were hoping for a pension from the king. The king did give Mary something, a prison term for fraud. I guess the king was angry about the deception. You could say he was hopping mad. Oh, God, that's bad. Guinea pigs are not pigs, and they're not from Guinea. They are rodents native to the Andean region of South America. Andean. Eh. Animal sounds. Music hath charms to soothe the savage, beast. Easy for me to say. Gives the impression that if you played a violin for a charging bull, it would stop in its tracks and softly sway to the music. What are we, dumb? Okay. I wouldn't suggest doing that because the above-mentioned statement is misquoted. What British playwright William Congreve actually wrote in his play The Mourning Bride, 1697, is music hath charms to soothe a savage breast. Of course, if a savage breast is charging you, I think you've seen too many Woody Allen movies. Okay. Ragging on wagons. Oh yeah, this is actually kind of irritating. A much-beloved image of the Old West of that is that of wagon trains traveling in straight, single-file lines across the prairies. Wagon trains, however, whenever possible, traveled side by side, up to 10 miles wide to avoid the billowing clouds of dust, as well as the furrows, ruts, and potholes of the previous travelers. If they had, in fact, traveled single-file, every wagon behind the lead would not only eat their dust, but would wear it and have it clog their nostrils and cake over their eyes. Not to mention, do you know how much wagon... Oh, the shit. I mean, literally. Good God. But Dad, everybody's wearing them. Oh, God. 3 teenage girls in Tokyo became fatally ill, and their deaths were blamed on a silk kimono possessed by evil demons, not the butler this time. In February 1657, a priest was summoned by the girls' fathers to see if he could perform an exorcism on the garment. At the cleansing ceremony, or the dry cleaning ceremony, the fathers of the young victims watched as the priest reverently took a torch and, while deep in prayer, set the cloth aflame. As if on cue, a strong wind blew the kimono to the floor, catching the house on fire. Fuck. The wind fanned the flames of the burning house, and soon fire engulfed the wooden dwellings throughout the city of Tokyo. Before it was contained, the notorious long-sleeve kimono fire incinerated three-quarters of the city and took the lives of more than 100,000 people. Things could have been worse. The noise of the destruction could have awoken Godzilla. Holy shit. Pressing his luck, Johannes Gutenberg is credited not only with the inventing of the printing press with movable type, but also the ushering in the Renaissance period in, Europe. In 1447, Gutenberg borrowed 800 guilders from his partner John Fust, along with Fust's son-in-law Peter Schoeffer, established his printing business with the intention of printing the Bible and quickly paying back his debt. But things didn't work out for Gutenberg, and his first Bible didn't come out until 1455, and by then he was 2,000 guilders in debt. Fust took Gutenberg to court, where the judge declared him bankrupt and threw the book at him by awarding control of the types and plates used in his Bible, plus the printing equipment, to Fust. Fust's chauffeur printed the first book that included the printer's names, their names, and date, and explained the mechanical process by which it had been produced, but made no mention of Gutenberg. Although Gutenberg never made a penny from his invention or received any fame during his lifetime, he is forever bound in the pages of history as one of the most influential inventors of all time. Who was it? Was it Charles Schoeffer? He had a great quote. He said, "Never worry about people stealing your ideas. If your ideas are any good, you'll have to ram them down people's throats." Fun with racist stereotypes. Okay. Gypsies are portrayed as a band of nomads who travel around in wagons and are usually considered unscrupulous. Gosh, where to start with this one? First of all, there is no such thing as a gypsy. The people referred to as gypsies are actually Roma people, singular Rom, who originate from northern India. Gypsy is just a designation put on them by the Gaja. In any event, the term gypsy is inaccurate, comes from the Greek word Egyptoi? In the erroneous belief that the Roma are natives of Egypt. Gypsy, Egypt, see? And what about gypsies, tramps, and thieves? Hello, Cher. It is from this racist image that we get the word gypped. Yeah, meaning cheat. I don't like that word. Frédéric Chopin's Minute Waltz was not intended to be played in a minute, and the normal rendition of time is 1.5 to 2 minutes. He meant the word minuet, which means small, not as a 60th part of an hour. More fun with racist stereotypes. Yes, because it's not such a fabulous topic. In a horrible twist of fate, the Roma are technically classified as Aryan, but not the blonde-haired, blue-eyed Aryan race Hitler envisioned. Aryan comes from the Sanskrit Arya, which is historically referred to the people of northern India, the Roma. Hitler absolutely hated the fact that the Roma were the true Aryans and not his Aryan Nordic master race. In fact, other than Jews, the Roma were the only racial group specifically targeted for extermination by the Nazis. Yeah, I did know that. It's estimated that between 200,000 and 500,000 Roma died in German concentration camps. So a gypsy isn't someone with a nomadic, fun-loving, free-spirited lifestyle, but a race of persecuted people referred by a derogatory name. Talk about getting gypped. Rainforests go away, come again some other day. During a trip to Costa Rica in the spring of 1996, President Clinton stopped off at the National Park, a government-protected rainforest, to give his speech about environmental protection and preservation. His address included the line, "We destroy these resources at our own peril." Too bad his staff didn't agree. Clinton's people thought the speaking platform was too far from the road, especially since the president was on crutches at the time. They decided to bulldoze, level, and asphalt a 350-foot path for him right through the rainforest. Later, a White House staffer tried to put a good spin on it. The Costa Ricans were eager to pave the walkway for the president for us. Sounds like an example of not being able to see the trees for the forest. Any more photo ops like this, and we won't be able to see trees or forest. The Suwannee River, immortalized by Stephen Foster in his song The Old Folks at Home and Irving Caesar and George Gershwin in Suwannee, doesn't exist. It never existed. The original lyrics in 1851 experimented with the Yazoo River and the PD River and settled on the Suwannee River, but shortened the spelling for the rhyme. Caesar and Gershwin reused the popular name, and it was made famous by Al Jolson. The Spirits of the Republic. The 55 delegates who attended the Constitutional Convention from May 25th to September 17th, 1787, had more on their minds than creating a new form of government. They were also there to party. One receipt dated 2 days before the official signing of the U.S. Constitution listed, among other items, 156 bottles of liquor. Alexander Hamilton was under doctor's orders to consume no more than 3 glasses of wine per day. The fact that this regime was considered moderate says a lot about the drinking fathers of our forefathers, or fifth fathers. To be able to drink that much and still have the wherewithal to formulate a new government means our founding fathers had a pretty strong constitution. I can't help it. It's stupid pun day, apparently. An American missionary in Japan invented the rickshaw. No shit. Wait. An American missionary in Japan invented the rickshaw around 1869 to transport his invalid wife through the streets of Yokohama. And just in case you're wondering, his name was Jonathan Scobie. Our way, or ye old highway. When we think about the Puritans, we usually think of wholesome, God-fearing, uptight people in black cloaks with buckles on their hats. Yeah, hypocrites. But were the Puritans puritanical? They left Europe because of religious intolerance, but once in Massachusetts, they denied their own settlers any religious freedom of their own. In fact, religious dissenters were expelled from the colony. They weren't big fans of democracy either. The first governor of the Massachusetts Bay Colony, John Winthrop, described democracy as the meanest and worst of all forms of government. Justice to the Puritans meant just us. Yeah, they were full of shit. Caesar or seize him? Julius Caesar, dictator of the Roman Republic, later the Roman Empire, was one of the most influential and powerful men in world history. He was a great military strategist and political leader who expanded the territory of the Roman Republic all the way to the Atlantic Ocean. With all these credentials, why was Caesar's nickname the Queen of Bithynia? Interesting. I'll tell you, in 80 BC, young Julius Caesar was ambassador to King Nicodemus IV, a Roman province in Asia Minor, Bithynia, and reportedly had a fling with the king. Most of the writers of the time mentioned the alleged affair, and Mark Antony even charged that Caesar's adopted son, Octavian, earned his adoption through sexual favors. Was Caesar really in love with Cleopatra, or was he just in denial? Okay, that was funny. But, you know, spectrum. Can't really apply presentism. An unusual stock exchange. In Boston, Massachusetts, in 1634, a carpenter named Edward Palmer was commissioned by the town's elders to build the first wooden stocks intended for public punishment. Well, there's a great contract. After completing the work, Palmer submitted his bill for £1.13.07, which nearly blew the buckles off the elders' shoes. Puritan officials felt the price was so high as to be considered extortion and voted to punish Palmer. He was fined £5 and ordered to be set an hour in the stocks, becoming the very first victim of his handiwork, a classic example of someone taking stock of himself. Oh, where's the lockbox? In October 1937, the stock market crashed again, almost as drastically as October of 1929. The reason? In 1936, Social Security taxes were withheld from paychecks for the first time. Consumer spending dropped because people had less of their own money, the economy shrank, and unemployment shot up to 22%. Social Security was socialism. But there was little security because the money skimmed off people's paychecks didn't re-enter the economy until January 31st, 1940, when the first Social Security check was issued. A woman named Ida Mae Fuller, who who had been in the system only 2 years and had paid in a total of $22, was the first recipient. Ida May lived to be 100 and ended up collecting $22,000 in Social Security benefits. And they say people don't fall for pyramid schemes anymore. The circle of lies. Common safety rule these days, if your clothes catch on fire, is stop, drop, and roll. But a safety rule for the pioneers of the westward expansion was, if Indians attack, circle the wagons. Stop, drop, and roll could save your life, but circling can kill you. Can you imagine the time, labor, and logistics that would go into circling even a few wagons? Accomplishing this task would be a load off the pioneers' mind, but before it could ever happen, the Indians would have taken a load of the pioneers' minds by scalping them. Circling the wagons was an invention of Hollywood filmmakers who liked the way it looked on film. Some wagon trains did form a circle when they stopped for the night, but not to protect themselves against attack, but to make a corral to contain the animals. Yeah, because otherwise you're chasing goats all over the fucking prairie. August 8th, 1945, 2 days after the U.S. Army Air Force dropped the nuclear bomb Little Boy on Hiroshima, and 1 day after Fat Boy devastated Nagasaki, the Soviet Union declared war on Japan. By doing this, the Soviets were able to partake of the spoils of the Pacific War without actually having to fight in it. True, but they did the heavy lifting on the European front. They deserved it. Sorry. Cherry's Jubilee. You've probably never heard of them before, but in their heyday, they were a staggeringly popular act. The Cherry Sisters, and no, they weren't strippers. Okay. The sisters' popularity did not grow out of their talent. In fact, just the opposite. They were billed as America's worst act, and people in the late 1800s flocked to hear them warble and clump around the stage. No one was disappointed at the horrific spectacle of the Cherry Sisters. The sisters went along with the billing as America's worst act and were under the delusion that they were actually popular for their act and that the billing was just a publicity stunt. After a show at Hammerstein's Theater in New York in 1896, a reviewer compared their singing to the wailing of damned souls. But when the review was reprinted in their hometown of Des Moines, the sisters sued for libel. During the trial, they were asked to perform their act for the court. They did, and they lost. From the Cherry case stems the protection of fair comment and criticism as part of the libel law. The verdict popped the Cherry sisters' spirit, and they went from wild cherries to sour cherries as fast as you can say Bing. That's so fucking wrong. Shh, don't tell anybody we're here. On April 14, 1865, one of President Abraham Lincoln's last acts before retiring for the evening was establishing the Secret Service, originally for the purpose of preventing the counterfeiting of currency. People are always shocked that they deal with counterfeiting. Later that night, John Wilkes Booth assassinated the relatively unguarded Lincoln at Ford's Theater. Congress soon debated adding presidential protection to the duties performed by the Secret Service. They did, like most things in Congress, they only thought about it. They didn't actually do anything. Finally, in 1894, the Secret Service was commissioned to begin informal part-time protection of President Cleveland. This was a full 29 years after the assassination and 13 years after the assassination of Garfield. I guess the Secret Service was a secret a little too long. Drats, foiled again. Since they first appeared in 1860, cigarettes have caused a lot of harm, but one good thing has come out of their manufacturing, aluminum foil. Richard S. Reynolds, the nephew of tobacco king R.J. Reynolds, was looking for a new way to protect cigarettes from moisture and replace the tin lead wrappers in use at that time. In the 1920s, the price of aluminum dropped, and it clearly became the answer he was looking for. In addition to the price, aluminum was shinier and more appealing to consumers. Two decades later, Reynolds' company, Reynolds Metals, introduced to the world lightweight, non-corrosive foil, Reynolds Wrap. And where would we be without it? I shudder to think. There is no proper side to a sheet of aluminum foil. The shiny side and the dull side function identically. One side comes into contact with the metallic roller during manufacturing and becomes shiny. The other side stays in contact with the conveyor belt. That the shiny side is better is just an old wives' tale. How much was the Bill of Rights, and who paid for it? Some people argue that protecting freedoms of religion, speech, assembly, press, and petition were the most important issues, and that's why they're in the First Amendment. James Madison, who is credited with writing the Bill of Rights, initially proposed 12 amendments to the Constitution, but only 10 were approved. The now famous First Amendment was actually the Third Amendment in the original draft. The first two dealt with congressional pay raises and reappointment. So even at the beginning stages, politicians were first and foremost interested in money and power.
Shocking.
Poison ivy isn't an ivy. Poison oak isn't an oak. They are both shrubs and members of the cashew family, and my Latin is not good enough to say that. The number you are trying to reach is no longer in service. Alexander Graham Bell, who is credited with creating the telephone, or stealing the idea from Anthony Meucci, depending on how one looks at it, decided to cash out on the invention early by selling it to Western Union. One would think an invention of this importance would have been snatched up immediately, but surprisingly, Western Union gave Bell only static. The committee that was formed to review his proposal stated the following. The telephone is named by inventor A.G. Bell. He believes that one day it will be installed in every residence and place of business. Bell's proposal to place his instrument in almost every home and business is fantastical. The central exchange alone would represent a huge outlay in real estate and buildings, to say nothing of the electrical equipment. In conclusion, the committee feels that it must advise against any investment in Bell's scheme. We do not doubt that it will find users in special circumstances, but any developments of the kind and scale Bell so fondly imagines are utterly out of the question. The people in Western Union must have been off their cradle. Shaking things up. It's so common today that it's even referred to as common. Common table salt. Salt is such an abundance this day. Oh my God, I can't read today. It's so uncommon today that it's even referred to as common. Common table salt. Salt is in an abundance these days, and it only makes sense that it was always readily available. But it wasn't. In fact, salt was very expensive and not always easy to come by right up until the 1900s. Traders in ancient Greece bartered their slaves for salt, and a lazy or unruly slave was considered not worth his salt. An insult still in use today. Our word salary dates back to Roman times, where soldiers were paid an allowance in Latin called a salarian argentums, which translates to salt money, so they could buy salt. The Latin word salus for well-being and salubritas for health both derive from the Latin sal, meaning salt. In Mali, West Africa, salt was once worth its weight in gold, or another way of looking at it, gold was what's worth its weight in salt.